This is Radio Equal Shock with your host, Alex Smith.
There are not many truly wild places left in this world. Environmental activists have been fighting to save one of them for 18 years. It's known globally as the Great Bear Rainforest. Situated on the central and northern west coast of Canada, this rainforest is home to giant trees some thousands of years old. In countless coastal inlets, a rich mix of plants and animals thrive, including the iconic white bear, the Kermode or spirit bear. Supposed enemies met to find a solution. Dedicated green activists, including Greenpeace, Forest Ethics, and the Sierra Club, met in marathon negotiations with executives of giant forest companies, First Nations leaders, and stakeholders to preserve this great legacy. Eventually, the government of British Columbia made a promise. Now, almost a generation later, that government is within 60 days of sealing the deal, a model of multi-party efforts to conserve nature that has inspired hope around the world. To help us understand what's at stake, we have reached one of the long-term campaigners to save the Great Bear Rainforest, Valerie Langer. She's the director of BC Forest Campaigns for Forest Ethics Solutions. Valerie, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you so much.
Now, we have many listeners in the United States and Canada, but also around the world, in Europe, Australia, even a growing interest in places like South Korea. Why do you think, Valerie, so many people are watching this battle to save the Great Bear Rainforest?
Well, it's a place that captures the imagination very easily. It's got spirit bears, the only place in the world that has these white-furred black bears. It's vast. It's the size of Ireland. So it's a magnificent example of the original temperate rainforest. It's the largest tracts of ancient temperate rainforest in the world. So all of these things just capture the imagination so easily, along with the fact that the forests have existed or coexisted with the First Nations cultures there. So there's a beautiful interaction between the human culture and nature in a way that's like it has been for thousands and thousands of years.
Yes, it's interesting. Part of the deal struck provides alternatives for logging jobs for those original inhabitants of the area, the First Nations people. What are the key elements of the proposed new economy?
Well, the proposed new economy is something that the First Nations themselves have to develop. We're not dictating to them what kind of economy. The work that the environmental organizations contributed was to raise capital. So we raised $60 million in private financing from private foundations and individuals. And then we leveraged that to get the federal and provincial governments to each contribute $30 million. So that fund, it's a $120 million fund, is available only to the First Nations communities for economic development and for conservation management.
Could you sort of take us there? What is it like for someone from Germany or New Zealand when they first visit the Great Bear Rainforest?
Well, the first thing is that it's hard to get to. The Great Bear Rainforest is actually quite isolated from most urban centers and from roads. So there are two locations on that entire 600-kilometer-long coast where you can actually get to the water from the ocean by a road, and that's Bella Coola in the south and way up in Prince Rupert in the north. And other than that, it's really quite inaccessible. You have to either fly in or go by boat. So the shock to somebody who comes from a very populated region like Germany, for example, would be that they fly into a place where there are literally no communities, no inhabitants for valley after valley after valley. And then there will be a First Nations community of perhaps 100 people, and then you would go, if you were in a fast boat, perhaps another 2 hours before you'd reach another community, and then another 4 hours before you get to the next one again. So very, very isolated. And it's what we call wilderness. It's a true wilderness area.
So there are some intact coastal valleys really untouched by humans other than the First Nations, who are very gentle with it. What will be preserved by this deal?
Well, the agreement that's currently under proposal, so there is a set of what we call land use objectives. Those are new legal logging rules that are out for the mandatory 60-day public review right now. That gives the public the time to comment on the rules if they wish. And that forms one part of a package of conservation and human well-being agreements. The full conservation package would see 85% of the Great Barrier Rainforest off-limits to logging through some really quite novel initiatives that have not existed anywhere else that we know of in the world. So new ways of thinking about how forestry happens, where it can happen, and also who forms part of the decision-making. So this package of ecosystem-based management, as it's called, contains rules for logging, supporting policy that requires the logging companies to create reserve designs, so actually show where the conservation is going to happen on the land base, like map the conservation out. It has the backbone of conservation being a protected areas network that is almost 2.3 million hectares in size. So that, again, is close to the size of some countries. And it has essential aspect of human well-being, in particular shared decision-making between the province and the First Nations. And the First Nations have, each of them, different kinds of requirements for what they feel makes their communities whole and healthy. And that is things they're negotiating, like the end to the trophy hunt, the transportation access to their communities so that they can develop tourism, by having the ferries stop in their communities, and carbon credits. So the Coastal First Nations and Nanwakolas Council have established a carbon offset program through the conservation of these old forests. And if a company wants to offset their carbon footprint, they could buy from the First Nations. It's unusual in that most carbon credit schemes do not actually deliver the funds directly to the indigenous people of the forest. This one's thought through and developed by the First Nations themselves.
There's a lot of innovation there that could be applied in many parts of the world. I'm wondering, were the plants and animals really studied before logging is going to be allowed for where the richest areas of biodiversity are?
Yeah, well, we're working with the best available information, so the inventories that we have are the best ones that are available, and the whole system of ecosystem-based management is a science-based system. So the principle that drives it is called the first amongst equals principle. There is a driving principle or foundational principle of ecosystem-based management called the first amongst equals. And that is why there are two goals to this whole deal: human well-being and ecological integrity. And the first amongst equals principle drives the science-based conservation requirements because we acknowledge that without a healthy environment, there is no possibility of a healthy community. That, in fact, communities that are healthy are nested within healthy environments. So we have developed a conservation package that meets the best available science. That is, that 70% of the natural levels of old forest have to be maintained over time. One of the unusual and I'd say innovative parts of this agreement is that it's a 250-year plan. This is not a short-term plan where we just say protect this area and log the hell out of the rest. It's protect 2.4 million hectares, plus apply best information to how and where you can log and make sure that none of the logging exceeds the science-based limitations, the best available information that we have on how much forest has to be maintained for a healthy forest.
Now, I've heard some of these giant ancient cedar trees can be worth up to $60,000 or even $80,000 for a single tree in the marketplace. So I asked myself, why would big forest companies give up some of the most valuable timber in the world just to accommodate a few environmentalists?
Well, if only it was that easy that we just asked them and they then said, "Oh, sure, we'll give up all that resource value." Well, it was a pitched battle that happened for many years, and one of my colleagues, Jody Holmes, who's our science director, has literally been working on this for 17 years. It started out as a very acrimonious battle between the logging companies and environmental groups, which spilled out into the marketplace. We were able to cancel hundreds of millions of dollars worth of contracts of these logging companies. They lost Home Depot's cedar contract, and Lowe's canceled all wood or lumber coming from the area. Kimberly-Clark canceled their contract, not just with the companies in the Great Bear Rainforest, but they just left British Columbia altogether. They didn't want to be near it. And this was starting to make the companies toxic in the marketplace. Nobody wanted to buy a piece of lumber with a protester attached to the end of it. So after years of this kind of battle, the companies said, "What do you want?" And we started negotiating. There, at that time, there were a number of organizations involved: Greenpeace, Forest Ethics, Rainforest Action Network, and Sierra Club of British Columbia. So the negotiations began, and we hammered out an agreement that said, first, set these 100 valleys off limits to logging in a temporary moratorium until we figure out what the science requires and until we get to a larger, more firm agreement with all parties. While we were having this conflict and that conversation with the companies, the First Nations and the province were also in a pitched battle over who has the rights to make decisions about what kind of management happens on the land base. The First Nations, of course, have never ceded their traditional territory, so there's contested land title in the area. These two conflicts between the environmentalists and logging companies and between the province and the First Nations eventually converged. And with years of science inputs and negotiations and an agreement that we would float two boats at the same time, the ecological and the human well-being, the First Nations rights one, that we would arrive at an agreement. That's the nutshell history of how we managed to get such an unusual and we think long-lasting type of agreement, one that acknowledges that the durability of any kind of conservation will actually happen if the people who are responsible for it own it. That is, that the First Nations are integral to the conservation plan, the management of it, and have gained the ability to float their communities from this kind of social disarray that they had for decades under the post-colonial rule to the point where they are decision makers over their lands.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with our guest from Vancouver, Canada, longtime forest campaigner Valerie Langer. Now, Valerie, in this long-term project, somebody has to pay for the mediator, the research, the conference rooms, the years of staff effort. Tell us about Rainforest Solutions Project and some of the backers who made this possible.
Yeah, well, it was in the early 2000s, after we had struck the agreement with the companies that we would sit down and negotiate out and hammer out a deal, and we had a conversation with the First Nations, and we're starting to figure out what this conservation agreement could look like. It was clear that we needed good science, and we didn't have the right kind of science. And it was clear that we were going to have to work more collaboratively. We were moving from conflict to collaboration, and we needed to have the means to do that over a longer period of time. So there were a number of foundations who backed the idea. There was a couple of foundations, mainly American foundations, actually, at the beginning, who put forward the money for environmental groups to get the right science. So a group was struck called the Coast Information Team, and it was formed of the best experts in temperate rainforest science. And we had environmental representative scientists, industry had representatives, First Nations had representatives, and so did the province. So we all had to agree to who the representatives were. they came up with a with what's called the Ecosystem-Based Management Handbook, and that is the science basis for this whole project. It took $1 million just from the environmental groups, another $1 million from industry, and $1 million from the province for that group of scientists to come up with the best information available in the world at the time around what was required to conserve the temperate rainforest in the Great Bear. So that was a big chunk of change right there. On top of that, we realized that we needed to get more coordinated. So Sierra Club BC, Greenpeace, and Forest Ethics joined together to form the Rainforest Solutions Project. We were able to then hire joint science staff, economists, and other expertise that we held jointly to help us, advise us on what the best route forward was and to help us negotiate an agreement with the industry, with the province, and with the First Nations groups. And it's been a long time. You know, the environmental groups don't operate on air. We have to pay staff, and we have to pay contractors and scientists, and we have to keep our telephones and our photocopiers working, and that takes money. So there's been, thousands and thousands of individuals who have funded the organizations, and there have been about a dozen foundations who really put their money where their mouth was. This was very risky. I just want to make that clear, that nobody has done anything of this sort in the world before, and certainly not at this scale. So to embark on an effort to both change the decision-making structure over land and resource management in an area the size of Ireland, to work with 28 First Nations, 5 major logging company, and a bunch of environmental groups to craft this completely new way of doing things is a big risk. And there were a number of foundations who said, we're putting money in year after year, and we're going to make sure that we back this project through to success. That's the kind of thing that's very unusual. Most foundation funding happens on a year-to-year basis. You make an application, they'll give you partial funding for your project for a year, and you have to go out and raise the rest and hope that somebody will fund you again the next year. But change doesn't usually happen in a year. As we know, it sometimes takes decades. You look at any social movement, change takes decades. And we're changing minds here. We're changing the way that people behave towards ecosystems. We're not just making superficial change. So it was very unusual to have the kind of financial backing to enable our organizations to stick with this for so long and have the confidence that we could stay at a negotiating table and bring as much valuable science to the table as could industry or the province.
So what needs to happen now to wrap it up? Does this become a law? What does the government have to do?
Yeah, we're in the home stretch now. I'm actually elated. After I've been working on this as well for 17 years in a number of different capacities, and there were times when our optimism was run kind of ragged, but we finally have the new logging rules out for public review for 60 days, and during that time, industry, the First Nations, the province, and our environmental organizations are working on finalizing the supporting policy documents. There are a number of other legal requirements, like finalizing the boundaries of the protected areas, and also there's going to be a new Great Bear Rainforest Act, which houses some of the key new provisions for ecosystem-based management to actually work. So we have to make sure that those legal and those policy elements that form a package are completed. At the same time, the province and the First Nations are finalizing their human well-being agreements. Those have to go forward at the same time as the conservation aspects. So we will have First Nations with human well-being agreements signed with the province that are binding agreements, and we will have new logging rules that are legally required. There will be requirements limiting the amount of logging that can happen every year by law. There will be legal requirement that limits the logging companies to only log on 550,000 hectares of this 6.4 million hectare area. You got that? That's only 15% of the Great Bear Rainforest will legally be available for the companies to do the sustainable forestry. So that's 85% of the Great Bear Rainforest off limits to logging and legally, and the First Nations with binding agreements to move towards healthy communities.
Is there anything else you would like to tell our listeners?
There is one sticky spot in this unfolding, wonderful story, and that's that there's been a company that has always opposed all of the rules. It's a company called Timber West, and from the very beginning, they were antipathetic to ecosystem-based management. They didn't want it to happen and have opposed it. And we found out that they actually logged in the last 5 years far above what the chief forester allocated. And we're very concerned that they are stacking up plans to log in even more endangered forest in their tenure. It's in the very, very southern part of the Great Bear Rainforest. And in order for this agreement to really work, we have to get Timber West to actually come on side and be part of the solution. And we need the province to actually step in and make them do it.
Right. If you're going to have rules, they're not going to work unless there's some sort of enforcement. Is there an enforcement arm to this agreement?
There's a monitoring aspect to this agreement, but it's not enforcement. We require the province to actually enforce the laws, and that's been a challenge over the last decade. The province has laid off almost all of the enforcement staff in the Ministry of Forests, so there's lots of people who are stamping the permits and very few people who are actually checking to make sure that the rules are followed. What rules do exist? The Great Bear is unusual in that there are very clear rules, but we need the province to actually enforce them. Otherwise, none of this works.
So on a personal level, Valerie Langer, when you go to one of these estuaries lined with majestic trees and grass beds where the grizzly bears may be sleeping, what do you feel inside?
I'm a forest gal. Alex, I got into this work because something in me just has an affinity with forests and has since I was a child. When I arrived on the west coast of British Columbia, this is almost 25 years ago, I couldn't believe it. There is something absolutely magical about the forest that has mist rising out from amongst the trees, these mountains that meet the ocean, and literally where you can stand at an estuary quietly and a grizzly bear or a black bear or a rainforest wolf or spirit bear will come out and fish for salmon, where you can watch red sockeye and the silver chinook swimming up these rivers. There are eagles. It's like a Serengeti, except it's the wet Serengeti. It's an absolutely stunning ecosystem. It even smells good. There's nothing when you are there that doesn't feel special.
We've just visited a very special part of the world, the Great Bear Rainforest, with the longtime environmental campaigner from British Columbia, Canada, Valerie Langer. She's the director of BC Forest Campaigns for Forest Ethics and also works with the front-running forest conservation and markets group called Canopy. Find more links for this conversation if you want to follow up in my Radio EcoShock blog at ecoshock.info. Valerie, thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Thank you so much, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith reporting. There's lots more to come on Radio EcoShock, so please stay tuned. I'm also working on new climate music to help spark the Paris Climate Talks. Watch the Radio EcoShock SoundCloud page for that. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening. And thank you for caring about our world.
The human wave can come together. Minds arise as surely as the seas. Divine forms in the minds of many. We believe in the heat. Days flow by to our times of trials. Minds in motion, with the bee.